Hello everyone, and welcome to So Many Games, So Little Time, a board game podcast and also a YouTube channel where we talk about video games. I'm saying we, but today it's actually just me, and the main reason for that is actually me. Evangelos is not here because I'm recording this at different locations where I have a little bit of time, and a green screen in this case, because I have so much to do these days. I am so incredibly busy. I have my wedding, which will be on the 16th. I've been married for 6 years, but I've never had a wedding. I mean, we've never had a wedding, so we're finally doing that. We have 3 kids. That's why we didn't have the wedding initially, because we had the first kid, then okay, we'll do it afterwards, and the second, and the third, and you know how it goes. Or maybe you don't, but now you do. At the same time, very busy at work as well, because we have the English week, which means I have to prepare a bunch of stuff. And there's a lot of stress, and also DSC, which is basically the SATs for or A levels for Hong Kong students. A very, very nervous time. And also because of the wedding, my family and friends are coming over from different countries. So of course they need to be entertained, which I do with a smile, and I like it, of course, as well. But it adds less time for other stuff, obviously. And also on top of all that, at the end of the month, we are moving to a different place, which will be better for the channel as well. More space and more room for games and all that kind of stuff. Better surroundings. But if you add everything together, it just becomes much more difficult to say, you know, I'm going to quickly make a podcast or record a podcast with somebody else. Now I'm really just trying to find some space. So what am I going to talk about then now? I am actively avoiding topics where we can both speak on. So for example, some games that we've played together that I won't talk about until he's here as well. There's no date on those, right? So we have more than time enough. So what I'm going to talk about is a while ago when we started the podcast, I made this wheel of topics. It was supposed to be like randomized choice of topics where we talk about. But now I just chose a couple of topics, which I'm going to talk about now. Once again, for the people listening, I'm using a green screen, so I will be putting pictures behind me, but you can always check it out on YouTube as well. Obviously, I will talk about it in a way that you can understand what it's all about. Okay, so in the wheel of topics, the first one, first topic I want to talk about is I own this and you should too. So basically, a game that I feel is so good, I feel many, if not everyone, should own. And that game is Seasons. Now, there is a new game that has come out recently that is supposed to apparently challenge us for the throne. I've forgotten the name now, but I'm looking it up in the background. I'll get it soon. But I'll talk more about that afterwards. Seasons is a game where you are a mage. Well, everyone is a mage, and you're in this mage competition, and you have 3 years to basically become the best. So what do you do each turn? Well, in the beginning of the game, you will draft. So everyone has 9 cards, and then you look at the 9 cards, you choose 1 card, you keep it, and then you pass it, and then you choose another one, you pass it on, blah, 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 until you have 9 cards. Those cards can be 2 things. They can either be a magical item, or a familiar. Now, familiars are orange, magical items are purple. And of course, they do a bunch of things. The cards, they have costs of energy. So it could be water, it can be earth, fire, and wind, which you will collect throughout the game. Or it can also cost crystals, which is like the victory points, okay? So after you have those 9 cards, you have to divide them into 3, because 3 different sets, because there's 3 years. So in the beginning of the first year, you have your first set, and then the second set will unlock when the first year ends, and the third set will unlock when the third year ends. So in the beginning, you draft first the 9 cards, and then you make 3 different stacks of which cards you want to use in which year. So this adds another layer of strategy, especially in the beginning. But once you play the game often, it's very clear quickly which cards you should take. I feel, you know, the choices tend to push you in a certain direction. Anyway, so once you have your cards, you take the 3 from year 1 in your hand, and then you start the game. In the middle, you have the seasons track, which is of course divided into four seasons. And then you also have these chunky dice, which are the color of each season. So for the yellow, so I guess you could say it's fall, those are all yellow dice. And then winter, which is red, I would say is, the red part, which would be summer, those are all red dice and so on, but they are big and chunky dice. They're so satisfying to roll. So you roll them, and on those dice, it will have energy, it will have transmutation icons, and it will also have your summoning gauge icon as well, and then also some crystal icons possibly. So basically on your die, you're either going to choose a combination of all those things. So obviously the energy, you just take it, you add it to your board. The summoning gauge is important because when you choose that, you get to move it one spot up. And then that means if your summoning gauge is zero, you cannot summon any cards. If it's one, you can summon one card, and so on, so on, so on, maximum being 15. So you can summon at max 15 cards. And that's another thing. On the die, it can also be a card icon. So you have all that, right? And then you also have the transmutation. That means if you have some energy that you don't like, you can sell it. But of course, in certain seasons, some energy is rare, so you can get a lot of crystals for it. In other seasons, it's not as rare, so you only get like a tiny amount of crystals for it. So that's how the game goes. You roll the dice, there's five dice. If you play with four people, it's always player amount plus one, and then you choose a die, next player chooses a die, and so on. And the last die that's remaining has pips on it on the bottom. I mean, they all have, but you look at the pips with the last die, it has 1, 2, 3. And depending on the number of pips, that is the amount you move the season marker forward. So if the die is always 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, the game will be over very quickly. But if it's 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, it's slowly, so slower. So you can actually choose the tempo of the game, which I really love as well. So what else can I say about this? The cards do all kinds of different things. You've got cards that mess with other people. You've got cards that increase all the things that you can imagine. You've got cards that will break the rules in some way. So suddenly, instead of maximum 7 energy, you can have 10 energy, things like that. You can play it on BGA because that's where I've been playing it recently. It's a ton of fun. It used to be my number one for the longest of times, maybe 5 or 10 years even, until other games knocked it off. But I think it's a gem. It has a lot of expansions. It has two expansions, and I would recommend them purely because they introduce more cards. The mechanics it adds on the side, I'm not really fond of. For example, you have the Destiny die, and then instead of rolling your own die, you can roll that die and collect some tokens, and get more points in the game. I think the base mechanics plus the expansion cards is more than enough. That would be perfect. So the game I was talking about that has recently released is the Veil of Eternity. People call it a little bit like a Seasons Killer because it's shorter, it's more efficient, but you do have short-term planning there, not long-term. So I think from the description, I mean, I already ordered it. It's coming. It's on the way. So I'm very curious. But from the description, I would think it's still both are warranted in your collection, to be honest, especially because one is short-term planning and the other is long-term planning. I think that already makes a huge difference. Anyway, so that is I Own This and You Should Too, Seasons. The next one I want to talk about is board game history. It's basically a story of my board game past that I feel is worth it to talk about, that's interesting enough to share. And that was a game of Great Western Trail. Now in Great Western Trail, I play with Teresa, who is in some videos on the channel, was a two-player game. And in Great Western Trail, you're basically herding cattle. You are moving all the way up to Kansas to sell the cattle. During the game, you can move a train forward to make sure your cattle gets to farther stations, which means more points. You can hire different people to make everything cheaper. Like if you hire farmers? I guess it's not farmers, deckhands or whatever. People to help you with your cows, basically, then you will get a discount on that. If you hire engineers, it's easier to move your train around. If you hire carpenters, I believe, it's cheaper to build your buildings. Because in the beginning of the game, the board has a lot of empty spaces that you can fill up with buildings and also hazards that will be added automatically throughout the game. And you collect different things, you sell your cows, you try to get as much money and points as possible. This is a very, very brief overview, okay? But I think it's a really, really good game. But what the story is all about is we play with the Railways of the North expansion, which expands the rail track a lot and adds a lot of different cities and routes to get there. So during this game, it was like two rounds still to go. And, you know, you couldn't really tell who was going to win. So it was a very interesting game. And I felt like, okay, I just need to get my train to Minneapolis. Then I'm going to get those 10 points, I think. And then I'm fine. Then I'm good. That's the only thing I have to do in the last two rounds, you know, just do normal stuff, but make sure that I get to Minneapolis because that's a bunch of points. It's important. Okay. So one round passes. All right. I still remember, okay, I have to go to Minneapolis. Cannot forget, you know, because the final round, I have to do it. Da, 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 da. So we talk a little bit. I do my moves and the game ends. And then we start adding up the scores. And it looks like it's going to be very tight. And it's like, okay, now let's add all the stations, points, and everything. And I look, and I add. And then I see I forgot to go to Minneapolis. The last couple of rounds, that was my only goal, 10 points. And I'm like, no. Like, I don't mind if I lose at all. But if I lose because of my own dumb mistakes, like a dumb mistake like that, then I get really annoyed at myself, of course, not at other people. But I'm like, no. But I mean, it was still early, you know. We're still adding the score. Maybe I might win anyway, you know. You never know. But suddenly, winning was more important because I don't want to lose because of that. So we add the points. Okay, da 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 da. Final score: Teresa wins by 1 point. 1 point. I just looked at Minneapolis and I was like, And I think that's like 4 years ago, that game. It's still really, really fresh in my memory because gaming experiences can be really nice, really good environment, whatever. And sometimes it can just be mistakes, and sometimes it can just be annoying people. In this case, it was just a stupid mistake. Probably lost my train of thought, forgot all about it, and then, oh, so annoying. So I told myself in my mind I won. But actually, I lost. In the BG stats, I also put the original score so that I lost. So I am fair. Okay, that was the board game history. Next one is BG stats of the month. And I'm going to take my paper with me to take a look. Now, I played 64 times this month, which is crazy until you factor in that I played a lot on BGA. Because if I look at physical games, it's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 games only physically. Everything else was on BGA, BoardGameArena.com. So what have I been playing on Board Game Arena? Let's just talk about that. I played Bag of Chips, which was very interesting because I ordered it immediately. Basically, a very simple premise. You have a bunch of chips in a chip bag. It actually looks like a chip bag, which is nice. And everybody gets, I think, 5 or 6 endgame scoring cards. And then there will be chips drawn from the bag 4 times. I think 5, 4, 3, and then 2. And after every time you draw chips from the bag, there are like 4 or 5 different colors. And like there's 7 yellows, but there's only 3 purple. There's like a nice overview of how many there are. So the first time you draw 5, and then people have to remove 2 of their endgame scoring cards. Okay, no purples. There's already 1 purple that came out. I can toss that one. That's easy. Things like that. Then the second one, you draw 4 chips, and then people remove 1 card, 1 endgame scoring card. So at that point, you still have 3 cards left. And then there's 1 more round, and then you draw 3 of them. And then people have to decide, okay, out of the 3 that I have to predict that 1 card will not score, and the other 2 will score. So you put 1 on the left and 2 on the right. The left does not score, the ones on the right, they score. And then you reveal one more, and then you reveal the last one. Because the last one is important. There's a bunch of cards that say the last chip to come out is yellow, or purple, or red, or orange, or something like that. And then you check the score. Okay, your negative one. Was it really negative? Did it fail? Because if it succeeded, it turns into negative points. And the positive ones, did they score? You add the score. And the scores can be outlandish. There's like, okay, did all the yellows come out? So 200 points, something like that. Or just one of each chip, 1 point. So things like that. But of course, you then compare your score to everybody else. And then whoever has the highest amount gets two reward tokens, and the second person one reward token. And then you keep playing round after round until someone collects four tokens. And my last game on BGA was pretty funny because we played with three people, and everyone had three at one point. And then we'd have a final round, and I ended second, sadly. So that's Bag of Chips. I played Race for the Galaxy. I played It's a Wonderful World. I played Great Western Trail. I played Super Fantasy Brawl. I would not play it on there again because it only really works when you're at a computer. If you're at a computer, it works. But on your phone, oh my goodness, you zoom in a little bit too much and has to reload the whole game, or it just crashes and you have to close the window, restart it again. I have an iPhone 12, by the way. Or you have to like go like, dun, 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 come on, react. Oh, it's so annoying. So if I have time and I can play live at a computer, I'll play Super Fantasy Brawl, but otherwise, no way. Sea Salt and Paper, I like that. Ticket to Ride, Obsession, Lords of Zidit, more about that later. Sushi Go, Seasons, of course. Planet Unknown, I played 6 times and won 0 times. I'm waiting for my actual copy. I'll be better at it then, because once again, annoying. When you play at a computer, the tooltips really work well and you can see what everything means. But on your phone, it doesn't. So you have to kind of realize what it is just from the look of it, or look up the rule books and everything, which is too much hassle. Heat, Pedal to the Metal, I played 8 times and really, really enjoyed Heat, but I'm not gonna talk about Heat. Instead, I'm gonna talk about Altered TCG. So Altered, I really enjoyed. I played it 9 times this month, but we're now the 5th of March, and I think I played it another 4 times. I talked about Altered as well, the previous podcast, actually, so I shouldn't talk about it too much, aside from the fact that I've now played all the factions and there's not a single one that I don't like. And I think that's very cool, because when I play StarCraft or Warcraft, I always choose random because I like all the races. Here, all the factions, I love them all. I think they're all cool. Like you have Braavos, who has the fire faction, but every time it's your turn, you summon an extra troop. When it's your turn, you don't summon it, of course. You have one of the factions, I forgot the name. I'm looking it up now on my phone a little bit. But one faction always rolls dice, which is pretty cool. Not always, but often rolls dice, which I like because it makes it very tense. Another faction always summons one troop with the strength of one, but then other troops can, you know, empower it, make it stronger, and things like that. They're very mobile. Another faction, which is like the plant faction, they can root themselves, which means after the round, the cards don't go away, which can be a pain if you're fighting them, but you just have to find cards that sabotage, which will remove them anyway. So all those, 6 of them. Now I played all of them multiple times. So here, you know, I'm gonna check in general because I was only checking this month now. So in general, I played Altered 16 times, right? And I played each faction at least once. And I've won once with each faction at least. Some of them I lost more with, but I mean, it just shows that, I mean, maybe it doesn't show that it's balanced, but it feels that you always have a chance to win no matter how you play. Now, these are just starter decks, okay? Will it change when the game actually comes out in June with all the booster packs and the rares and people are creating their decks? I think it might. It might be like, okay, you want to go for this unique or whatever and you'll get stronger. That's true. But I like the fact that the game is already good just with starters. And I think that's really, really important. Anyway, enough about BG stats. I'll move on from that. Also, by the way, before I say anything else, I'll put on the screen in YouTube my BG stats name. So if you want, you can come and join. And yeah, that's where you're going to have to find it. People who listen to the podcast, my name is Joachim, J-O-A-C-H-I-M. J-O-A-C-H-I-M. And then space S-M-G-S-L-T. So many games, so little time. That's my handle. All right, so what else can we talk about? Because we are now at how many minutes exactly? I can't tell. 21 minutes, okay. So that's fine. Just Let Me Play, Man is the game that I'm itching to play, and that is still Heat Heavy Rain. Although now, with the fact that the new game is coming out, The Veil of Eternity, once that arrives, I'll also be very hyped to play it. But Heat Heavy Rain, I have an episode now, a race, on the YouTube channel where I play badly and I missed some rules because I kind of underestimated how many rules BGA takes care of. So I'm not used to remembering them. So I did some of them wrong. I'm not saying I would have won because it seems in general they're two difficult maps. But I will say that my plan is to have a tournament, a championship soon with all the tracks. So I'm looking forward to that, and I will videotape that as well, record it. And knowing me, I'm probably going to give the cars some names instead of just legends. Like, for example, the red legend might be Charles Leclerc. And then the green legend might be Fernando Alonso. We'll see. Okay. Even though they weren't alive during that time. Okay. So it's time to go. It means I'm not ending the podcast. It means which games have recently left or might leave my collection. So Frosthaven is leaving my collection without being played. Why? First of all, I am selling it roughly even because I bought it cheap because now it's double the price on Amazon. But I'm also selling it with the insert cheaper than what I bought the insert for. So everything together is basically the same price that I bought it for. And also has the soul scenarios. So I'm selling it because I was put off by Gloomhaven through a bad experience. And I always said, I'm going to go back to it. But I never did. And then Frosthaven arrived and I backed it. And I thought, you know, maybe when it arrives, I'll be motivated to play it. But I wasn't. So it's been used as a way to block my lower cupboard from my kids, because otherwise they always get into the cupboard and take stuff out and are basically annoying. I know there's ways to just lock the cabin so they don't have to, but I guess that was just the easier way and it just stayed there. But now it's finally going to leave. I found someone to buy it. And I think that's just the main reason is I have so many campaign games as well, which I'm way more excited to play and that I still haven't touched. And that's why Frosthaven has to go. Also, I think in general, it has been reviewed less, I wouldn't say not as good as Gloomhaven. I think it got better, but also more bloated, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm just guessing here. Just for me, even if they told me it is the best game ever now, it's difficult to go back to someone if you had a bad experience, back to someone, to something after you've had a bad experience. So yeah, I didn't have a bad experience with anyone, by the way. That's why it's leaving, okay? Next one is Shelf of Shame, Opportunity, or Overkill. It is definitely Overkill because my Shelf of Shame has reached 80 games. 80. That's why I'm stopping myself from buying more games. Even though I said The Veil of Eternity is coming and everything, but I promise. No more. Just get rid of at least half of the Shelf of Shame before I think about anything else. But anyway, talk about any game that's on there, why it's still there, and why haven't you played it yet. So basically campaign games. I have Dungeon Universalis. I have ISS Vanguard. I have Midara. I have The Legends of Malia coming. I don't have it yet, but it's coming. I'm sure I have a, what's it called again? The Japanese game from Awakened Realms. Tamashii, of course. So I'm just checking what else I have on here that's a on my phone. What else is on here that is a campaign game? Oathsworn as well, of course. And I think that might be it. So Oathsworn, Tamashii, yeah. Oh, Solar 175. Yeah, that's also one for sure. Well, I can remove Frosthaven now. So my it went down a little bit. Yeah, I think that's it. I really think that's it. Swords and Sorcery, actually. So no, it's not it. Swords and Sorcery as well. Yeah. Anyway, more than enough. And I think there's even other stuff coming as well, aside from Legends of Malia. So yeah, I would almost be happy that Anastasia was cancelled, but I'm not. Okay, that still stinks. That is so horrible, so horrible. But anyway, okay, let's move on. If I could go back in time, talk about a game that you regret selling or culling, and that would be Lords of Zidit. I've been playing it on BGA a little bit, but it's so much better in person. It's also incredibly difficult to get, so I really hope Libelut will reprint it. Very quickly, what is Lords of Zidit? You are a lord, and you are traveling across the country on your steed, which is often like a dragon-like creature, and you're visiting cities. Now, sometimes these cities are empty, and then you can't do anything. Sometimes these cities have units to recruit, and then it's like this circle on top of them with like five or six spots. They have different colors, and the colors, they are basically the units. So, for example, if it's orange, you put an orange farmer on it. If it's green, it's an orange ranger. If it's yellow, I think it's white, I think it's a cleric. Purple is a mage. Anyway, they'll go from weak to strong. So the mages, the purple ones will always be last, the farmers will always be first. Some cities will have one farmer and then an archer or whatever. Some will have no farmers, some will have a lot of farmers. So it varies. There's like, I think, 20 cities or something in there. Anyway, the game will start, there'll be like four cities where you can recruit, and then four cities where there's a monster. So you can go to a city with a monster, it's fine. But on the monster, it says how many units and which units you need to kill it. So it might say two farmers, one archer and a mage or something like that. Or maybe it's just two clerics, something whatever. So you know what it is. But how do you get these units? How do you get these monsters? Well, that is the beauty of it. You program. You have a program board in front of you, and I think you make six moves. Six or eight? I think six. Yeah, six makes sense. And then you can choose whether you do an action or you, so an action would be recruit a unit or fight a monster, right? Or you can choose wait, or you can choose one of the many lines that are on the board that connects the cities. So that's black, red, and blue, if I'm not mistaken. So you program. And the cool part is you're looking around the table and thinking, okay, I think he's gonna go there and she's gonna recruit there. And they are going to do this, and them are going to do that. And then when you look at it and you start programming yourself, you say, you know what? I'm standing really close to that monster. People are probably going to think I'm going to kill it, but I'm going to wait and then kill it later. Or I want to have that farm. I don't want to have that farmer. I want to have the archer. But the other person thinks I'm going to get the farmer. So they're probably going to wait. So I'm going to go around and then go there later so I can definitely get the archer, something like that, right? And the cool part is once a city runs out of people to recruit, the city goes away and a new one comes out with a number which corresponds to the number on the board. But you know that in advance. You know if that city over there runs out or that one over there, this one over here is going to come out. So I can already go there and recruit before it's even there because you program, right? So that's really cool. Same thing for a monster, when you defeat it, you get three types of rewards, but you can only keep two. So you either get money, so that's one of the victory conditions, or you place towers in the area where the monster was, or one of the areas near, next, adjacent to the monster. And then the highest tower score points there as well, or the number of towers you have. And then you can also choose bar tokens, which is, I guess, culture. And then you can put them in the adjacent areas as well. Sorry, the bar tokens are adjacent areas. The towers are where you kill the monster. There's always like a dotted line, so you have to put it there. But with the bar tokens, you can choose any area adjacent. It'll also go to the middle, where there's like a little fortress where it's secret how many you put in. The other place is people see how many you have, so they can go higher than you, basically. But in the middle, you have no idea, but of course, it's more points. And why are these three different things important? Because in the beginning of the game, the three victory point conditions, they are shuffled and put face down. So once the end of the game happens, they are revealed and say, okay, first we score gold. Ah, you over there, you are last in gold. You are now out of the game. It doesn't matter if you have 5,000 bar tokens, which is impossible, but you're out of the game, okay? Then we check bar tokens. Oh, no, I don't have enough bar tokens. I'm last. Now I am out of the game. And then the remaining, let's say three people, they will then compare their towers and whoever has the highest towers wins. So you don't have to be the best at all three. If you're lucky, that one thing that you're good at might win you the game. So I like that as well a lot. Honestly, I'm not 100% sure if they're revealed at the end or revealed at the beginning. I don't remember. Either way, I'd be fine with it. But yeah, anyway. So then there's two more things I'd like to talk about, and those are Kickstarters that caught my eye. The first one is En Route, or En Route, depending on how you want to pronounce it, from Crowd Games. They're the same one of the City of the Great Machine, right? Which I really, really liked. Really, really cool game. Nice production. There's videos on the channel and everything. And now it's En Route. The reason why I put it here is because I thought it was really cool. Now and again, I like to play Roll and Writes, right? Not always, but it's like a nice filler in between and so on. And this one is cool because it has Hong Kong. It has different cities. It has basic cities. It has Hong Kong. It has Sydney. It even revealed Arkham as a stretch goal now, which is also very intriguing. And also like it when you need to make decisions, when you really need to think. So this is more like a flip and write, not a roll and write, or a stroll and write, like they call it. So basically, you have a map of the city, and you're going to create like a walk through the city. But of course, you want to go create a route, so basically, where there's a lot of visitors, right, tourists. So on your turn, you're going to choose a card from the cards in your hand, which will have a person on it, it'll have a number on it, and it'll also have probably some either a famous building or landmark and some icons like a circle or a square or triangle, I think. Yes, a triangle. So you have those images, right? And then from your hand, you choose one. Let's say, okay, I want to have more triangles because they're different types of tourists, okay? Like the green ones, they like nature. The red ones, they like the more populated areas. And the blue ones are more cultural, like museums and stuff like that, I guess, architectural buildings, you know, things like that. So let's say we have the hikers, the shoppers, and the, I don't know, the cultured people, whatever. So those are the people, right? So you choose your card and say, okay, I want to have more shoppers. So you put them down because it has that icon on it. And then the people from your left and right will also give you a card face down. And then you reveal them. And then you look at them, you choose an extra one. Because on your city board in front of you, everyone has one, you have the numbers on the top and the numbers on the side. And then those cards will both have a number. So you can say, okay, it's 6 and 4. And then there is where you have to write it, write the information down. So for example, if you have like two red circles and one blue triangle, you're gonna take the red marker to do the circles and then the blue one for the triangle. And then maybe the other card says has a landmark, which means you can boost the value of that landmark. So of course you want to make sure you go there on your route. And yeah, that's basically how that goes, how the game works. But then each city introduces new mechanics and has a twist on it. It looks nice, it looks clean. And I think honestly, this is the kind of game that I could introduce to my friends who are not used to playing games, and they would like it. Because you have like the tactical feel, like a tactile feel of having the different markers and the colors, you can make it look nicer. Then you have the route where you use purple, which looks cool. Yeah, I don't know. It's intriguing to me. So that's something that you can check out if it sounds interesting to you. The second one I want to talk about is Street Masters, because I told you I'm going to stop backing and buying games and make some exceptions. Street Masters is one of those exceptions, and En Route might be an exception too. I'm pretty sure it will be, because it's not that expensive, and for reasons I just told you. The reason why I back Street Masters is because my Indiegogo campaign of Street Masters was stuck in a warehouse for, years now, a year or two, I'm not sure. And in the end, Blacklist Games, such an ironic name now, had to sell the IP to Steamforged, right? Also the people from Uthia, by the way. And they said, you know, we are going to ship all these pledges from the people who backed the Indiegogo campaign. We'll ship it to you, but we have two options. Either you pay us again for shipping, because of course Blacklist Games doesn't have that money. And then that's it. You just ship, you get your stuff, that's fine. Or you back the new expansion on Kickstarter, and then you don't have to pay the extra shipping. We'll just put it together. So that's what I'm doing. The Kickstarter does have a little bit of a problem where they kind of repackaged everything. Not the existing pledges, they're gone, right? You can ignore them. But the new Kickstarter of Street Masters has the same stuff, but they put all the different expansions together in different boxes. So if you're missing like this expansion or that expansion, you either have to pledge for the whole box because it might be part of other expansions, or just accept that you don't have it. And I am in the accept that I don't have it camp because I don't want to pay more on top of what I've already paid for the other stuff. And plus there's already so much stuff there. And who knows, down the line, if I really, really need to, I can still cop it later once my shelf of overkill goes down, right? Okay, I think that's enough for today. Hopefully next time I'll be able to find some time with Evangelos, but it might be until next month before we can actually record another podcast. So for now, you're stuck with me. If you have any comments, anything you want me to talk about or anything else, please do let me know in the comments or in any other way. And come and challenge me on BGA, because actually my most played game on there now is the Castles of Burgundy. And I always want to play. Or if you want to try Altered, let me know. I'm always up for a game. I'm willing to explain it to you on the fly. No need to learn. I will type it out for you. That sounds like I'm desperate for friends, which I'm not. But you're welcome anyway. Okay, see you next time. My name is Joachim, always will be. And this was Sony Games All Time. Bye.